and I went and became interested in this music, and about 1977 became involved in playing out. I played some gigs, some coffee houses at Avila College and other places, where I started doing English songs and Irish songs and folk music. So those are some of my first out gigs in paying venues, really putting myself out playing that music. And again, Bob Reeder was doing it at the same time, but we never knew each other. Late 77, I became disillusioned with school and what I was doing, and I took a plane. Back then, Freddie Laker and all the standby, you could get over across the ocean for $200. I took whatever money I could get, I took my guitar, and I just went over to England. And it was a different England then, believe me. It was pre-Thatcher. It was a very different place. And what I found very quickly was England, Ireland, Scotland, all of them had a lively folk music scene and a folk club scene that I was able to walk into. And from almost the first moment, and I'll tell you when that moment was, when it became totally what happened. It was that threshold in life for me. And that was when I was standing in February, probably early February in 1978 on Princess Street in Edinburgh. And I started talking to this guy, this Scottish guy, and I said, do you know where I could find Celtic music? And he says, well, if you meet me by the Sir Walter Scott Memorial on Saturday night at 7:30, I'll show you the music. So I thought, okay. His name was Alan. That's all I remember. I think his name was Alan. I went there 7:30, and the guy was there. Unbelievable. And he says, well, actually, I got the flu, so I kind of go with you, but I'll take you there. So this man who I met then and never saw again, ever again, and do not remember his name, took me up to Greyfriars, if you know Edinburgh, into a place called Sandy Bell's Forest Hill Pub. It took me into Sandy Bell's, and I crossed that threshold into this crazy Celtic session with these bearded people. They looked like this guy here with big sweaters and cable sweaters and Bowerons and beer and cigarettes, and I never was the same. I walked in there and I walked out another person. That, of course, is where I met Johnny and Phil Cunningham and a few other people, and became the center of my music, and led to many other things. So for the next number of years, I traveled deeply in Scotland, Ireland, England. England was just as much a part of it, and there was just as much Irish music there. And to some degree into Brittany and France, quite a bit into Brittany. But when I came back, I used to hang out in the flat with a guy named Dennis Collison. And Dennis played me a group called the Boppy Band. And he played me Arthur McBride by Andy Irvine and Paul Brady. And he played me what was happening that I didn't know. You know, I still thought it was... I knew the Clancy Brothers, I knew the English scene, but I didn't know this. And he says, yeah, there's this guy in this one tune, this one group, the Boppy Band, and he plays the bouzouki. I thought, whoa! It was Donald Lenny, of course. So this whole trip was about that, and then I found a book in Dublin about the cittern. And sitting waiting for my plane going back in London Heathrow, I saw an ad in a folk news magazine I bought. It said, citterns, bouzoukis, and... other instruments used by British Isles artists. Lark in the Morning, California. So went back to Kansas City and ordered a bouzouki. And by the end of the summer of 78, I had my first bouzouki, and I picked it up, and I could play the tunes I was hearing. I could hear these amazing tunes like De Dannon. I don't play this now. I play with the bow, but...
Thank you.
played that on the bouzouki. I said, wow, it sounds like them. And it was amazing. So I had to go out and play, and I was trying to find places to play. I was working in a theater called the Bell Road Barn, and Carla will remember. She was around then, too, but we kind of went our separate ways. That we were in theater. She and I were in theater together from high school, and we knew each other from junior high, and we were best actor and actress. And my theater world changed after that, but she saw me when I was getting insufferable about wanting to play Irish tunes. And we started playing these tunes, and I begged Jenk and David at Bell Road Barn to let me do a gig up there, so I got to play some tunes, started looking for places to play. And then my next-door neighbor, Dave Brown, anybody know Dave Brown? Dave Brown was the other founder of this, and one other person. The first person, I'm not sure chronologically how it worked. I had met Keith Van Winkle in the camera store here at Crown Center looking for stuff for my camera because he was a photographer. And I saw that he had a Bilbo Baggins belt buckle, which really meant something back then. I mean, now with the movie and the franchise. Back then, if you were into Bilbo Baggins, you were cool, and that was Celtic. So I said, hey, man, you want to play some music? He says, yeah, I play the fiddle. So we eventually got together. Now, I'm not sure how it coincided, because I believe Dave first saw that I got this instrument and he ordered a Bowron. So he got his first Bowron drum from Lark in the Morning, and we started playing in his basement. And then we were asked to play at the Renaissance Festival, and this was the second year of the fair, 78. And it wasn't a big thing then. They were begging people to come. They were letting us set our price, and we were playing. And we went out there, and we took young Pete Fopiano, Jane Fopiano's kid. He's a late Pete Fopiano, but when he was about 12, we made a cart, big old cart that Dave made, like a Renaissance cart, and we put our instruments in, and he carried it around, and we played. And we thought, this is amazing. And then in the fall, I had a chance to play at my high school, and I got Keith to come in. And what happened? Keith said, well, will you play, Keith? And he was willing to play for free. Keith, I know you're not here like none of the musicians who were there then, but I'm saying this so everybody knows how cool you were. Telling folks. So we had this record. I had this record by Tommy Peoples, who just passed away, one of the greatest fiddlers Irish music ever knew. And it was a tune that I said, it had music on the record that you could learn back in those days. Shanaki Records put music on there. So had music. And I said, Keith, learn that tune, man. We'll play it. It's called The 9 Points of Roguery, and it goes like this. Together, the three of us, and I thought, what's the name for this group? And I had to have something, you know, sword and sorcery like, and Talisman, that was the name, Talisman. So we started to play at that configuration, and at the same time that summer, KANU in Lawrence had a bluegrass and folk show by a guy named Mike Younger, I don't remember. He was leaving, and I had gone up there and said, can we play some Irish music on the show? People got to hear this, man. We got to hear this. I was like an evangelist. And he said, yeah, play some. He said, you're so articulate about this. I'm leaving the show. Will you take over the show? I said, well, I wasn't what I had in mind. So I took over the bluegrass show at KNU and started playing Irish music at a time when nobody knew what Irish music was, but they loved bluegrass. And the first time on the show, I played Tommy Peoples, and this old lady came up from Lee Compton and said, "That Irish music is some of the worst music I have ever heard. Now, we pay for bluegrass. Now, a little of that is okay, but you just need to play more bluegrass." So I learned about bluegrass real quick and found out what I liked, too, and it tended to be newgrass. But anyway, so I did this radio show all summer and got to play the music for people, and that was important for another reason. Because the next year, Dave and I decided we were going to put on a show on KCUR in Kansas City. Said, "We want to do a radio show." We went to Sam Scott, the head of the station then, and said, "This music's great. We want a show." "Okay, you got a show. 1 hour every Saturday, right after Bill Shapiro, who just retired as well. You got a show." We called it Ballads, Bards, and Bagpipes. And from the minute we started, it was a hit. And within 6 months, we were syndicating it across the country. It, long before Thistle and Shamrock, it was the first national syndicated program for Irish, Scottish, English, Celtic music in the country. And it won all kinds of awards, and it went on until the 1990s, I don't know, because I will tell you that my history in Irish music in Kansas City of that lifetime ends in about 83, 84, when I left to move to Connecticut. So that's where that part of my life ends. But I do know that it went on for many years. And we did it, and we had fun, and it really... It brought the music out. It was one of the things, not just locally, but nationally, that helped make this music grow. And you could say that Dave Brown is one of the people that made Celtic music cool. And he's in his 90s now, and he's not here or able to be here, unlike many people who could be here who aren't. But he is able to hear what we say and know that he did this. Okay, so Dave, Keith, and I started to play, and then at the Renaissance Festival, we picked up another Irish fiddler named Jack Davis. Oh, Jack really, really knew Irish music. He played pretty well, and he knew about it. Traditional stuff, and he taught us more. And we played, and it ended up Talisman being a huge group. It was Dave, Keith, Jack, me, Jerry Osborne, who was a real Irish-American, first generation. And he just sang songs for the fun of it. And we would go to his old Irish parents and play for them. And they'd sing the old songs. And a girl named Paige Winslet, who was Jack's girlfriend, who played flutes. And we played various gigs around and did all we could to play. And it was an uphill struggle. Nobody knew what this was or cared. We didn't even have a place to play. It's not like today. There weren't gigs. There weren't folk clubs. There weren't venues like Kansas City has today. There was nothing. We had to beg to play. The only opportunity we had was a place called the Fool Killer, if anyone remembers that. It was a collective of folk music on 39th and Main, and it was a fallen down building, funky as it could be, and they brought national acts in, and they were activists and everything in between. And our first real gig was, I believe, early 19th, our first stage gig that wasn't, you know, that was paid, that was set up like that, of all of us together, was 79, early February. And it was a hit and a success. And we played all the music we knew, and we knew nothing at that time, but it was amazing for us. And that was Talisman's first big break. The rest of that year, we played every festival, everything we could, and struggled and struggled and struggled. And I think Keith had to go for a while. And different people came in and out. So by the time I came to summer, we were invited to Winfield and got to do a couple of sets at Winfield. But Jack got sick, had a heart problem, and I actually did the gig with Dave Brown and Terry Teachout. Now, Terry Teachout was a bass player and music critic here who's now the theater critic for the Wall Street Journal. And he and I were school friends. Terry Teachout... Talisman in the summer of 79 was Terry Teachout, Dave Brown, and Gerald Trimble. And we played at Winfield, and we did our best there, too. And that was my first exposure to a lot of the big national acts, and I realized how much I needed to learn as well. And Malcolm Dogwish and all kinds of people I met, Lisa Null. And that's what we did, and we kept working. We tried to get a gig in the summer of 79 at a place called Costello's Greenhouse. Do you remember that restaurant? Anybody? No. Well, we played and did an audition there and did our best. They said, yeah, you know, maybe we can have you play, but maybe if you'd wear green vests. Which, like, that's like telling a bluegrass player to wear overalls and go barefoot, you know, which they do, man, at gigs. They tell you that for bluegrass players. But it didn't work out very well. So there was no regular gig for a long time. Well, we moved through this and kept going. And in 1980, Jack left, and it was a new year. We had a friend named Colleen Williams, now Colleen Lowe, who played the flute. She worked at the Irish Brigade, which was an Irish bar out on Warnell, where people could... The only places you could play at that time was that and the Falcon Club, which closed down and became Harlings. But there were Irish gigs now and then there, but they were very much in the Irish-American world, and it was a very small scene. And we got with Colleen, and Keith came around, and we put together the new Talisman, which was Dave, Colleen, Keith, and Gerald. And we started playing enough that we had an article. You can check it out. And we had a big gig. I believe it was at Crown Center here on St. Patrick's Day in 1980. And the Star did the first article about Celtic music in Kansas City and featured us and actually featured Talisman for the first time. We could never get any coverage. And all of a sudden, they were interested. So we did our St. Patrick's Day gig, and we played and grew. And from there... we kept playing all that year and all that summer. There were other people around, but that was the main people who played. A guy named Bob Scagliotti played bass for a while. And different people played, but that was the core. Until at the Renaissance Festival 1980, I saw this guy in a cap playing a mandolin, and he was playing an Irish tune, and it was David Agee. And that's the next important name, because David wanted to learn Irish music. And soon enough, he was in the band, and Talisman became the lineup that really took it where it went. And it was Gerald, Keith, Dave, Colleen, and Dave Agee. And we became the Talisman that everyone knew, and we started doing the songs and started doing more and more gigs. We played the Fool Killer all the time. We played different venues. We played in St. Louis at the Focal Point. In 1981, things got strong because Johnny Cunningham, who I met years before in Edinburgh and became close to, we got to be friends over there. He decided to leave Silly Wizard at the time, the great Scottish band, and come here. And he asked me to play on his record, and I went up to Philadelphia, and I was unprepared, but we played on a record called Thoughts from Another World, and he played this tune called Wind and Rise. Thank you. Great Johnny Cunningham too. And Johnny Cunningham was, I don't, how many people know Johnny Cunningham? Anyone here? He was one of the greatest musicians I ever knew. He and Phil, of course, were part of Silly Wizard, and we were the same age. Johnny was a mentor to me. I play with the bow now, that's another story, but part of him lives on in me, at the best of me when I play, because of what he gave me. And Johnny taught me so much. That's when I started to become a better musician, because at the same time Talisman was playing, we did gigs here. I booked a little tour for Johnny. I did the whole tour, man, all through the Midwest. And we started in Kansas City and did the Fool Killer. And his influence came to everybody. So all these young players got to hear him. And at the same time, we began sessions at a place called the Subs Pub, which was Jardine's, and I don't know what it is now, but it's down there on Main. And we did sessions whenever we could. And when we weren't doing that, you know what we did? We went out to Westport when Westport was really hipper. You know, when it was really, it wasn't just a drinking place. It was a really nice nightlife. And we played on the street. Whenever we didn't have anywhere else to play, we went out on the street and played. And people loved it. And that's how we pushed the music. We built it. Dave, Colleen, Keith, both Daves, Dave Brown and Dave Agee, Keith Van Winkle, Colleen Lowe, myself, and other people. There were all kinds of people around who weren't players or were session players. Greg McCoy right over there. Stand up, Greg, or put your hand up there. Greg McCoy came in 1980. He's seen it from the beginning. And I thought he was cool because he had a Bowron. And he got the second Bowron in Kansas City. And Greg played the Bowron, and I thought this was great. So he was around from the beginning. And he pulled me out of a few fisticuff situations that were better left unsaid and undone. But he's always a great friend. There were other people like Gwen Irvin, who is one of the people along with Valerie Andrus, you know, today, and other people who started the music because they helped with the organization that Dave Brown founded and began called the Missouri Valley Folklife Society. He began that, and it became a huge, strong organization, brought in numerous groups. The first was a Canadian band called Bard in 1980. They brought in Dave Dannon. I don't know how we did it, but they brought in all these concerts and brought this music to Kansas City. And all those people were involved and really made this something. Now, I'm not sure how much time we have on the stage here. Does anybody know? 4 minutes? Well, all I can say is that this takes us up to the time when Irish music got to be known and Talisman was starting to draw people, you know, good audiences. Their last concert was something like 600 people. And it was due to all these people. The people I've named, you know, Bob Reeder was playing all along. And Bob Reeder's made his living doing this all this time. And all these people came in. And Connie Dover, as I said, was my friend. She sat in with the group a couple of times on a couple of gigs in St. Louis, but it was only later that she came in at a time when that ends my time in Kansas City. We had Talisman and for a short time a group called the Cowtown Cayley Band. But once I put out my record, I left and went to Connecticut. But we had all these years, 78 to 81, 82, Dave Brown, David Agee, Keith Van Winkle, Colleen Lowe, all the people I mentioned who helped play, Gwen Irvin, Valerie Andrus, Greg, all these people who were involved, and there's probably people I didn't mention, but those are the people who really pushed it. And I want you to know that what we have today came from those people and many others, and there were the Hibernians at the time, people, you know, different from us. But people who built all this, but I'm talking about the traditional music scene, the sessions that happen, the concerts, the groups, came from what these people do. And our city and our culture of the music owes something to this. And I would like to see the musicians and the people more interested in the history and how this works, because it is a tradition and it is something that's passed and cannot exist without what came before. And I'm proud to have been a part of it, to have been asked to do this today. My little part could only have been done because of the others that were involved. And I'm still doing it, and I'm very, very glad that I can be a part of that. Rise you stand with Farewell to Ireland.
Thank you.